Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you. And hey, we have two games to talk about. We actually played basketball last week, and Phil, it felt good to actually see college basketball on my television again, in particular Marquette basketball.
Yeah, not only was it exciting to have basketball, college basketball back, but dare I say it was fun to watch Marquette basketball?
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing two opponents that are that overmatched, I guess it's easy to have fun. We're going to react to the two relatively easy wins, what we can take away from them, and obviously things get a lot tougher this week with Oklahoma State on Tuesday, and then, of course, the Wisconsin Badgers on Friday. We'll get to that a little bit later in the pod. But, Phil, what can you take away from wins over Arkansas Pine Bluff and Eastern Illinois? As we talked about last week, these are two teams that were overmatched, especially Pine Bluff, seemingly way overmatched against Marquette, and that's kind of the way it played out. Really two easy wins, but at least we get to see what the new-look Marquette Golden Eagles are going to play like, what kind of, you know, how the offense is going to run, who's going to get the minutes. We got at least a glimpse of that. What were some of your takeaways from last week's two wins?
Yeah, I think one of the takeaways was, yes, these were games that they were supposed to win, but Marquette won them in style, right? Like the Arkansas Pine Bluff never challenged Marquette. And Eastern Illinois even, you know, crept back in, got the lead down to 10 with about 10 minutes to go in the game, and Marquette proceeded to reestablish itself and extend the lead and win that game relatively handily. So I think from a style point, I took away that, again, this was a positive style, a positive approach. I really enjoyed Dawson Garcia's game. I mean, I'd obviously seen some clips of him in high school, but just from the look and the style, especially how he and Theo John and he and Justin Lewis are gonna pair, I'm kind of really excited about that. At least just from a, I don't know if it's gonna produce outstanding results on the court, but from a pure basketball enjoyment sense, that front court is really a strong takeaway for me. I think that's going to be really enjoyable. What about you?
Yeah, I think the front court is obviously the easiest place to start, starting with Garcia, who threw two games as good as advertised. He had 16-8 against Eastern Illinois. He had 19-4, four rebounds and four assists against Arkansas Pine Bluff. He was named the Big East Freshman of the Week. Probably not the last time he's going to win that award this season. But yeah, the McDonald's All-American was as good as advertised. He looked confident out there, comfortable shooting from beyond three-point range. What are you, 4 of 6 in his first week as a college basketball player? So yeah, we'll take that from a big anytime. And yeah, the bigs looks like they can all shoot a little bit. You know, Justin Lewis hit a three-pointer. Theo John, 1 for 1. From three-point range. How about that?
I even tweeted to the effect, it was a little bit of, I don't know, maybe Game of Thrones or Dungeons and Dragons effect, but I tweeted that Theo John was the big who was promised, because I feel like we've heard for like 8 years running, probably starting with Devontae Gardner, about how, you know, big men or centers at Marquette were going to shoot the three or were capable of it. Granted, it was one shot, but I feel like Theo John is the first big man where, like, it was a good-looking shot in rhythm as part of the offense, and obviously it went in. So it's kind of like, maybe this will be a thing.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know if he'll take another three-pointer this year. If he doesn't, it might become a running joke that Theo John is the nation's leader in three-point percentage. Maybe we could just kind of keep that joke going all year. But yeah, as of right now, 1 for 1. And yeah, maybe wasn't the prettiest looking like three-point form, but it sure went in. And he took that shot confidently. Right. Like, they had practiced it several times, and who knows? He may get another opportunity to shoot threes. I just love that that's now on film. So right. I'm not saying people are going to run out to the three-point line and guard Theo John now, but at least it's in the back of their mind that when Theo's that wide open at the top of the key, maybe you need to step at them just a little bit, make them think about it. But well, you're not going to leave them completely alone.
Yeah, and Theo John's game just in general, I want to take a minute to talk about it. One, his free throws, remarkably better than they have been, right? And again, it's two games. Let's not extrapolate too far.
But weird 11, how not playing with a broken wrist can affect your shot.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy how that works. But, I mean, he's 11 of 13 from the free throw line. He was what? Just north of 50% the last year or two. So that's great improvement. He looks leaner. He's certainly, at least his listing weight, he's about 7-8 pounds lighter than he has previous years. And he looks more agile. Like, I don't think he's less strong, but he looks more agile. He, especially against Eastern Illinois, he was guarding some players out on the perimeter. And I was not panicked about it like I would have been in years past.
Yeah, I think it was actually Anonymous Eagle that tweeted last week that Theo actually lost a good bit of weight after his surgery that he had in the offseason. Maybe it was by design a little bit for him to trim up, but I think maybe initially the weight loss was a result of him just taking it easy and resting after he had that surgery. And I think as he's kind of rebuilt his body, he's tried to stay lean, but still kind of make sure that muscle comes back a little bit. But yeah, I would agree that he does look leaner. He moves better. We saw him run the floor and get a nice dunk last week. And yeah, he, and obviously the confidence is there shooting the ball, whether it's at the free throw line or that 1 3-pointer we had. Not saying he's necessarily going to become a stretch four or anything, but the fact that he may have a little more confidence in a jump shot, and that if he's going to be getting fouled more often, that he can go to the free throw line, and if he can, granted, as right now he's shooting 84%, is that going to keep up all year? Maybe, maybe not. But the fact that if he can be north of 70%, that'd be great, as opposed to, you know, if he's, you know, in the 50% range, which it's not what you want to see. He's a liability late in the game if that's the case. But yeah, I thought Theo looked great. But just the rotation of the front court in general of Garcia and Justin Lewis, whether alongside John or replacing John, and when at the times we had Lewis and Garcia together, I think Lewis, he's listed about the same size as Theo, or both listed at 245. Lewis is listed 2 inches shorter at 6'7", but he plays bigger than he looks. I think Justin Lewis does.
Yeah, for sure.
He plays strong. It looks like he's really tough in there. He's confident in the paint. He and Garcia are going to be a heck of a combination as long as they're at Marquette together. And so just that trio in the front court of Garcia, Lewis, and John, and just kind of rotating those pieces, I think is going to be a matchup problem for a lot of teams, perhaps even some teams this coming week. So that was something that I was encouraged. And perhaps it's an indication of what maybe Marquette might be this year, is a team that maybe runs through its bigs more than it has in the past. Obviously, Marquette has been heavily guard dependent the past couple years, particularly, you know, one or two guards in particular. Obviously, when you have a Marcus Howard or an Andrew Rousey on the team, they're going to get the ball and they're going to shoot a bunch. But when you maybe don't have that dynamic scorer from the perimeter, maybe you do focus on getting to your bigs a little more, even if it's not to get them a shot, just to get them the ball and see if they can draw and dish and maybe move the ball around a little more. So maybe we're going to see the offense go through the bigs a little more this season than we have been used to over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that was one of the other takeaways from the first two games. And I think it was definitely in the Eastern Illinois game. The ball movement at times was startlingly crisp and voluminous, I guess I'll say, right? Like, I mean, there were a couple of plays. There was one in the second half of the Eastern Illinois game where the ball never stopped moving, and there must have been at least 9 consecutive passes that resulted in a wide open shot. And I'm not saying last year's team couldn't achieve that every once in a while, but at least through the first two games, the amount of continuous ball movement this team seems to generate in the half court, again, I think it's probably a differentiation when you have a high usage player like Marcus Howard. The ball's just going to stop a little more. But if they can generate that kind of offense with that kind of ball movement, I think this offense has the opportunity to be really good. There's still a lot of, you know, inexperience issues that may rear its ugly head, but I certainly didn't see anything that makes me worried about the offense long term.
Yeah, I think it was good to see, especially, you know, early in the season against overmatched opponents, to share the ball, get everybody their touches, and give everybody a chance to score and show what they've got. And yeah, when you have number zero out there the past few years, when the ball gets to him, he's going to shoot, and that's fine. You wanted Marcus Howard shooting the ball. This year, there may not be a guy where it's like, we have to get him the ball, and we have to get him scoring, and he has to shoot it. And anytime he's open, he has to shoot the ball. There may not be that guy on this team this year, but there are plenty of guys who, if they have an open look or if they have an opportunity, you're okay with them shooting. It's just not a priority to get, say, Kobe McEwen the ball, or to get Greg Elliott the ball, or to get DJ Carton the ball and make sure he gets his shots. It's maybe more about creating the best opportunity among the five guys on the floor, and whoever gets the best opportunity and gets the best look, that's the guy who takes the shot. Now, when you get in crunch time and you need a go-to guy to get the shot, maybe that becomes a little more confusing or a little more problematic as far as who's going to be the guy in the clutch. But as far as early games, just trying to get the offense moving, and for a team that didn't get nearly as much preseason as they would have wanted to, first just it was shortened overall, and then when they had the 2-week shutdown because of COVID, they lost that week or two of practice time as well. So just to kind of shake the rust off a little bit, I thought the way the offense ran in the first two games was entertaining, and I agree, just to have an unselfish team out there is never going to be a bad thing.
Right. So what's the takeaway you have around? So, you know, we saw Dawson Garcia, Justin Lewis was good. The front, a healthy Theo John feels really nice for this team. What do you take away from the, especially against, before the Arkansas Pine Bluff game, you know, there was a lot of Twitter traffic about what the starting lineup was, and almost universally, DJ Carton was a starter. Well, two games in, DJ Carton is not a starter. He's getting good minutes, but, you know, maybe at least for me, not the minutes I expected him to. Is this good news, bad news? How do you feel about the start of the DJ Carton era at Marquette?
Yeah, first of all, shouts to Patrick Leary, the one person who did not have DJ Carton in his starting lineup. He nailed the starting lineup of Garcia, Kane, John, Cy Torrence, and Kobe McEwen. Those just appeared to be the guys that Wojo trusted to start, and it obviously worked out for the first couple games. Carton actually did play the most minutes in the Eastern Illinois game by, you know, barely. He played 30. You know, Theo John played 29, Garcia played 28, 21 for Kane, 27 for Cy, and 25 for Kobe. But yeah, DJ's minutes were lower in the Pine Bluff game, when he actually maybe was a little off. He only played 19 minutes in that game, while almost all of the other guards who started were 23 plus. My early takeaway is I still think Carton has the highest ceiling among all the perimeter players on this team. Maybe they're just taking their time getting him acclimated, I guess, getting him back on the court. And maybe just Wojo just likes the chemistry of maybe a pass first point guard like Cy Torrence out there. And then just the scoring ability and the length that McEwen and Kane give you. I'm not concerned at all about Carton through two games. Yeah, I think maybe we hyped him up a little bit because he was a top 50 recruit, and I think when he got eligible this year, it created quite a buzz about what he could bring to this team as far as helping them get to the tournament and adding some depth to the backcourt. But Carton may not have been quite as explosive or quite as crisp shooting the ball as maybe you would hope to see from him as the season goes forward. Maybe a slow couple of games, but I think when his shot wasn't falling, he did attack the basket a little more in the Eastern Illinois game, and that seemed to work out for him and maybe kind of get his confidence going a little bit more. So, I mean, you know, in the Eastern Illinois game, he did have 13 points on 5 of 10 shooting. He had 4 assists and 7 boards in that game. So the Eastern Illinois game was actually a pretty good game for Carton. He just wasn't as crisp in the Pine Bluff game, so I'm not concerned about him. I was surprised he didn't start, but I can't say it, anybody who's playing ahead of him needs to get pulled or have their minutes decreased at this time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm perfectly comfortable with the start of the DJ Carton era. There are no alarm bells. I think part of the reason to bring it up is, I know at least for me, I think my expectations after having seen him play now Like obviously, I saw him play a little bit with Ohio State, but not a ton. But seeing him play in a Wojo team, again, two games. But I think I just had overly hyped expectations, right? Given the ranking and the talk, I don't think he's a world beater right now. But I think that ceiling is certainly pretty high. I think it just comes down to. You know, where I maybe thought he was more fully developed. I don't think that to be the case, but also I don't think that there's anything that says he won't become fully developed. He's just not a game-changing guard from day one, right? He may be a game-changing guard by the time the season's over, but he's just a good, really good point guard right now.
He might be a game-changing guard Tuesday.
Right.
Yeah. He just didn't have electrifying games against games that were pretty much decided within the first 10 minutes.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm not really, like I said, I still think he's a great player. And I think having him currently as the sixth man could be awesome, you know,
right.
To have a guy who comes off the bench in relief of whichever guard needs to come out of the game first, just to have a guy who may even elevate the team by coming off the bench. It may give you a nice boost. So, I have no doubt he will be a starter at Marquette eventually, even if it's not this year. But who knows, if he doesn't start a game this year, maybe he could be a sneaky pick for Big East Sixth Man of the Year. But he is that good. And yeah, just his first couple games weren't electrifying. I think the last few years, we have set the bar pretty high for what a great game from a guard is.
Right.
So, I think his Eastern Illinois game was fine. I think you'll take 13, 4, and 7 most nights from a guy who's coming off the bench, for a guard who's coming off the bench. We'll see what Carton's able to do against these two teams this coming week. But, it was fine. Did it blow you away? No. But, again, the bar for what a good game from a guard is, it was kind of ridiculously high for the past 4 years.
Right. And they even mentioned in the telecast, and we need to remind ourselves, I mean, the last competitive game prior to these two was, what, January for DJ Carton? Was it January or February?
He left Ohio State in January of last season. So
right. So it's nearly 10 months of absence from competitive Division I games. You factor in, you know, distance as a result of COVID, the two-week pause, right? I think it's fair to say, you know,
January 26th was his last game before this past week.
Right. So almost exactly, you know, 10 months to the day, right, from his last game to his next game. So he, of all players, should be the most rusty, right? And I don't know whether you chalk it up to rust or what, but again, I don't think he came out as a fully formed world beater, but he came out as a guard that has some rough edges. But he will do some pretty cool stuff for Marquette. So I'm pleased with the start. I guess I'm just putting this out there that collectively we maybe need to, you know, just give it a pause or a moment before setting unrealistic expectations around DJ Carton.
Yeah. Or the team in general. What did you make of the rotation through? Again, these games were well decided pretty much early in the first half, both of them. The rotation was a little tighter in the Eastern Illinois game when it got within 10 in the second half. But any thoughts as far as guys coming off the bench, rotation minutes? You know, guys like Oso and Jose Perez really didn't play a whole lot in the Eastern Illinois game. They had limited minutes in the Pine Bluff game. Greg Elliott got his touches, but not really a ton of minutes. It looks like he's still kind of going to be one of your top, you know, guards coming off the bench behind Carton. Any thoughts on the rotation overall?
Yeah, I mean, two things. One, I would say, I guess I'm not terribly shocked, but it seems like it's going to be an eight-man rotation in high competition games for this team, right? So when they get into Big East, it's likely to be an eight-man rotation. I think Oso and Jose are going to be kind of on the outside looking in, at least right now. And that makes a ton of sense for Oso, right? You know, young, big, potential there, but he's not basketball ready like Justin Lewis seems to be. So I think it's going to be an eight-man rotation. I am a little surprised by the Greg Elliott minutes. I don't know if he's still on a pitch count from all his injuries of the past. I was expecting him to be, and he may get there, right? But I was expecting him to be more of a 20, 25 minute a game type of guard. And so far he's been sub 20 minutes. But yeah, I think that's where it is. And I think the eight-man rotation is the only way that really expands is either injury, which would still be an eight-man rotation, or if Dexter Akano comes back, right? Like I could see him coming in and stealing some minutes to go, maybe go to a nine-man rotation, but I think that's it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the tough thing with Greg Elliott is you can't play everybody 25 minutes between Kane, Cy, and Kobe, and DJ. You can't get Greg in there and play all those guys 25-plus minutes. They're just only you can only have five guys on the floor at once. So you just somebody's going to have to take a step back and maybe play those 10, 15 minutes a game. And right now it does seem like it's Greg. But whenever Greg is out there, he seems to bring you something, right? He's going to give you good effort defensively. He seems to make good efforts, good decisions offensively. He's still a pretty good shooter. You can't play everybody right now. And I think there are other guys out there that maybe give you a little more. I mean, you know, Jamal Cain gives you a little more length and rebounding, especially if you're going to, you know, you got to play him at the three. Simon Torrance is definitely a guy you want as your kind of your lead guard, your point guard, a guy who can distribute. Kobe's your scorer. Right, he's one of your guys who can score from the perimeter. So, all those guys maybe just bring something that just maybe a bit more than Elliott that just has them a little higher on the depth chart. But Greg is going to be an important guy off the bench. And yeah, would I love to see Greg? You know, for the sake of just liking him as a kid and liking him as a guy in the program, would I like to see Greg play 20 plus minutes a game? Yeah, but you just like I said, you can't get everybody 25 minutes a game. Everybody, some guys just have to settle into a role, and Greg is just that supplemental guard off the bench, and that's fine.
Right. I agree. I think Greg will bring a lot defensively, like so in some of those rotations and teams where we need to be lanky and long, you know, to steal a Jay Billis line where we need wingspan, right? It's going to be Greg Elliott and the Justin Lewis's out there playing. I think the thing that's interesting is from a lineup perspective and the rotation perspective is I think this is the first time in a while, and again, this is not a knock on Marcus Howard, right? One of the biggest fans out there, but you know, he was a good on-ball defender, but just his size and it just precluded him from really being successful on the defensive end of the floor, especially in pick and roll situations. And I think with the eight-man rotation we have, you know, DJ Carton would be the shortest player on the roster, and at 6'2" is serviceable, and again is probably a little beefier than say a Marcus Howard, and who knows, you know, paint touches or Allen over at Crack Sidewalks will come back with some synergy data that'll say no, Marcus Howard was good in pick and roll defense or something. But I just think defensively, rotationally, And from an alignment perspective, I think the rotation we have is going to be beneficial. I'm not ready to declare the defense is going to be, you know, above average, but these first two games tell me at least the defense will be serviceable, I think.
Hey, for what it's worth, Ken Pom has us as the number 26 defense in the country right now for adjusted defensive efficiency. Now, when you play Pine Bluff in Eastern Illinois, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
But, I'd rather be 26 after two games than 126.
And so, other teams have played bad teams, right? Like, so that's 26 compared to, you know, us playing bad teams and other teams playing bad teams.
Yeah, so can't complain there. So, the KenPom numbers, yeah, again, through two games against teams that Marquette was supposed to beat and beat handily, KenPom numbers are nice. They're 35th in adjusted offensive efficiency, 26th in adjusted defensive efficiency as we are recording this on Monday. And overall, Marquette is, 27 overall on KenPom. Again, early numbers, early returns, but that's where they are. So, things obviously step up a notch this week as they're taking on Oklahoma State on Tuesday, Wisconsin on Friday. Let's start with the Cowboys. team out of the Big 12, a team that actually for right now is actually ineligible for the postseason because of some past transgressions in the program, but not really anything to do with the current staff. The only thing that most people would know about Oklahoma State this year is that they have Cade Cunningham, a 6'8 guard who is projected as possibly the number one overall pick in the 2021 NBA draft. Oklahoma State off to a 2-0 start. Got a little bit of a fight from UT Arlington. That was actually a road game. They played that game in Arlington because that's where Cade is from, so that his family could see him play without traveling, I guess, for their opening game. So they played at UT Arlington, were able to hold on a close one in that one, and then they defeated Texas Southern pretty handily on Saturday. One thing about Oklahoma State, Phil, that I'm looking at, just they're not – all that big as far as the guys who get the lion's share of their minutes. You look at how KenPom has the distribution of minutes per position. They actually have Cade at a lot of minutes at power forward and center. Now, Cade is going to be a guy who handles the ball, though. I mean, he is a point guard, and that's what the NBA is looking at him at. But, I mean, the guys who probably do most of their work down low are the Boone twins, Keelan and Caleb Boone. They're both 6'8". They're 6'8", 6'9". Cade's listed at 6'8", but he's going to be mostly on the perimeter. I look at the matchup, and yeah, it's one guy to focus on, and Cade is going to create for a lot of other guys, and he's going to be a problem. But I think man for man, I think Marquette is a little deeper, and I think Marquette's big, especially if they can continue to shoot the ball the way they did in the first couple games. I think they could present some matchup problems for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you've seen a lot of Cade Cunningham. Who do you think from Marquette guards Cade, right? Like, obviously, you're not putting a guard on him.
Yeah, I would almost say just because of Oklahoma State's lack of size, it might be Dawson,
right?
Really. It's not going to be Theo, probably. Theo's probably going to guard whichever one of the Boone twins is on the floor. So it wouldn't surprise me if you're putting either Justin Lewis or Dawson Garcia on Cade. And I guess the next option after that would probably be Kobe or Jamal, just because, you know, Cade's length is a problem. And Cade has always thrived in pick and roll situations. His high school coach was Kevin Boyle, who, if that's a familiar name, he's kind of like a high school coaching legend. He coached at St. Patrick's in New Jersey, so he coached Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Kyrie Irving, and then he went to Montverde Academy, where he coached R.J. Barrett, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, so a lot of NBA guys. And Boyle said about Cade that he is a stat sheet stuffer, kind of like Simmons was, but he's a better shooter than Simmons, so he always let Cade shoot the ball a little bit more than he ever let Ben shoot it. But he always would want to get Cade in pick and roll situations, and that's kind of where he was always the best, because when people are setting screens for Cade, that's when he can either get to the basket himself and attack the rim, or just create for somebody else. And he's got really good vision, and he can kind of create for other guys. So that's what Cade is going to look to do. So Marquette has got to be really aggressive, really disciplined defending pick and roll against Oklahoma State, because that's what Cade is going to look to do, is go around screens, pick and roll offense, and try to find guys on the perimeter, or just attack the basket and get hoops for himself.
Yeah, that's where I wonder. I mean, Marquette's going to have to make a choice defensively, and this is obviously in the young season going to be the biggest defensive challenge Marquette's faced yet. But do they switch on those pick and rolls and pick and pops, or do they fight through the screen? Right, like I think if they're going to switch, I think Jamal Cain probably starts guarding Cade, simply because if you're gonna switch. You know, Jamal's going to be the best to kind of switch off. But you run the risk of, you know, somebody, even though Theo John's more agile now, you still run the risk of Theo John trying to defend and switch on to Cade and potentially picking up fouls, right? That's where Theo could get into trouble. So it's really going to be an interesting defensive dilemma of on the pick and rolls, whether you switch or if you fight through the screens and give up the edge as he comes around the corner. So yeah, that, I think that's going to be interesting. I think offensively, I'm not concerned. Like I'm not terribly worried about Oklahoma State's defense. So I think Marquette will be able to get theirs. I think the biggest concern I have in this game is, can Marquette stay out of foul trouble and can they kind of keep the players in front of them? Because you're going to be counting on, you know, especially if you're going to put, like, say a Dawson Garcia ends up on Cade at some point, or, you know, Justin Lewis having to play in the post against some talent there. You're putting a lot of pressure on players playing in their third Division I game, right? That's going to be an interesting challenge for this team, I think.
Yeah, if you could kind of, you know, Cade's going to get his points and going to get his assists, but if you can kind of just limit some of the other guys, especially their guards, I mean, they have some talented guards, but they're all young. Like, you look on their roster, just you see a lot of freshmen and sophomores,
right,
at the guard spot for Oklahoma State. So they're a team that has their issues with youth as well as Marquette will in some regards, but I think Oklahoma, like, take Cade out of it, and yeah, well, you can't take Cade out, but you know what I mean. But if you match up the guards beyond Cade against Marquette's guards, I think Marquette shapes up pretty well as far as being able to, you know, go against those guys point for point. And Oklahoma State, like, it's early in the season, but not necessarily a great three-point shooting team so far. I mean, they're not bad. They're 34%, but they're not a team that's going to be bombs away from three either. So I think if you can just kind of limit the damage that the guards other than Cade can do, I think this is certainly a winnable game. KenPom has it as a slight edge to Marquette, for what it's worth. They have KenPom has Marquette as a 3-point favorite in this game, and I kind of see it similarly. I mean, they're going to get a much bigger fight from Oklahoma State than they did either opponent last week, but I think Marquette can win this game by 4 or 5 points at home. Granted, there's no crowd, but still, you're shooting in your gym on your rims. Cade Cunningham is going to make his plays. But I think I like Marquette to get the win on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I'm a little less solid on that. Again, I just think there's enough I'm not going to even try that word. There's the Oklahoma State's pretty relatively dynamic with Cade Cunningham, which I think is going to put a lot of stress on the defense. And again, it's a totally different challenge than they've seen in the first couple of games. I would be more confident, obviously, if this was a regular home game with a home crowd, especially as young as Oklahoma State is, and, you know, maybe you rattle them a little bit and rally the Marquette troops. I think this is going to be a hard-fought game. I would not be shocked. I'm just prepping everyone. I would not be shocked if Marquette goes down double digits in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game and fights back and keeps it close. I'm not confident enough, and maybe I'm also going the opposite direction to avoid optimistic Phil, who tried to show up in the first two games. I think this is one Marquette probably loses by a couple of points, but they at least show some good fight and keep it close. I'm just not convinced that the defense will hold together enough to get enough stops that the offense can keep up.
I think my difference in the game is going to be what I said off the top, was just the hopefully the range of Marquette's bigs is going to be too much for Oklahoma State. I think hopefully the shooting from the perimeter, from Dawson Garcia and Justin Lewis, kind of what he could do inside and out. I don't know if Oklahoma State is going to have the guys to guard Marquette's bigs. And as long as Marquette can limit the turnovers from their guards and just get the ball to Garcia and Lewis, and who knows, maybe Theo John is going to be a perimeter threat as well, or just a guy who does damage in the paint and gets to the free throw line. I think Marquette's bigs are going to be the difference. So I'll say a close win for the good guys on Tuesday.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, speaking of good guys, we really need the good guys to come through on Friday, because the bad guys are coming to town. And that will, of course, be the Wisconsin Badgers, who are a top 10 team in the country. I think I saw somebody had them. I think Seth Davis had him third in his personal rankings. A lot of teams ahead of them had some tough losses last week. Villanova lost, Kentucky lost, there was another, Virginia lost. Wisconsin played the same two teams Marquette did. Point differential, if you want to play that game, not as big a blowout, but there's certainly something to be said for pace. Wisconsin plays a much slower pace, of course. Their offense and defense both grade out higher than Marquette's. Wisconsin's fourth in the country on defense, 20th in the country on offense. So they looked good. They looked just as good, maybe arguably better against Eastern Illinois and Arkansas Pine Bluff as Marquette did. Of course, this is a team that brings back a ton of experience. Guys, we have grown to love to hate, whether it's Reavers, Demetri Trice, Brad Davison, yada, yada, yada. You know all the usual suspects. Phil, how are you feeling about the matchup with the Badgers on Friday?
Yeah, the one thing to make note about the KenPom numbers is everyone needs to remember that the numbers are predicated on the numbers that were part of last season, and they slowly get last season's number kind of get weeded out. So Wisconsin's defense, I'm sure, no doubt, is good. But they are not four in the country good. In fact, I probably watched more of both of those Wisconsin games than the wife character, who is a Badger fan in my house, who managed to fall asleep during both games. But that's probably a artifact of, you know, Badger basketball being boring. But I actually feel surprisingly good. Again, I'm not ready yet to predict. I want to see how they play against Oklahoma State. I'm not ready to predict a Marquette victory against Wisconsin. But after having seen this team play the first couple of games and having seen Wisconsin play, I have no doubt this team has the talent to hang with the Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's going to be more experienced. As much as it pains me, they're probably better coached. You know, so that doesn't help. But yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting game. The Wisconsin's kind of twin towers. They've been playing Reavers and Potter together, and both of them are inside out threats. I think that is going to present a very interesting challenge to Marquette. I mean, maybe it's going to really test the theory that Theo John can't guard the perimeter. But then you're also taking your best shot blocker out of the paint. So I just think it's going to be a very interesting contrast in styles. How are you feeling about the game?
Well, the play of Marquette's bigs has me less fearful of getting blown out in this game. That's for sure. That was obviously a fear. I mean Marquette really got humbled by Wisconsin last year. But the fear going into the season was, Wisconsin more experienced, like I said, probably better coached. Even though I still think Marquette may have better pro prospects on its roster than Wisconsin does, but Wisconsin just plays so well together. And we didn't see Micah Potter in last year's game. He was ineligible after transferring, and when he became eligible last season, even after Kobe King left the program, that was kind of the spark plug that really powered Wisconsin to finish last season so strong and get a share of the Big Ten championship. And like you said, the combination of Potter and Reavers up front for Wisconsin is just tough for anybody. But in a different way, I think Marquette's bigs do present a challenge to opposing teams as well. And maybe the combination of John and Lewis and Garcia, that the rotation of those three that we talked about earlier in the show, can maybe help Marquette go punch for punch with Wisconsin if their bigs are able to make outside shots and if they're going to use those guys to kind of stretch our defense. But if you have two capable bigs on the floor who can match up with Potter and Reavers as opposed to just one, like Marquette had last year, really, it's a little more – I think Marquette could – keep up with Wisconsin a little more. But Wisconsin is going to want to slow this game down and play their pace and just really kind of grind out really tough possessions and get good shots on offense. And that's why they're just so frustrating. They'll slow you down and just be so patient and just take good shots and often hit them. And that's kind of what happened last year.
Speaking of Wisconsin and punch for punch, what dumb thing do we think Brad Davidson's going to do this game?
Let's see. He's already done punching a guy in the nuts against Marquette. I guess he hasn't tripped a Marquette player yet. That against other opponents. So maybe he'll trip somebody or maybe just like a cheap shot, just like stepping on somebody after a collision or a charge or something. So, yeah, Davis is always going to try to get his cheap shots in. That's just kind of part of his game, just to try to annoy the other team. But he's frustrating, but you got to give him credit for is the head games is kind of part of what he is, and he wins head games against his opponents quite a bit. Even if you may not think he's the most athletic or most talented guard out there, he gets the job done for that team, and that's why Wisconsin fans love him. So we'll have to see who on Marquette's side can kind of counteract what Davidson's going to do as far as just the head games and the defense, because you know he's always going to try to draw charges and just try to frustrate you that way. But yeah, as far as my prediction, as far as playing dirty, maybe yeah, he'll try to trip somebody or step on somebody.
Yeah, that seems right. Yeah, I think, you know, it'll be interesting because, like you said, Wisconsin will want to play its pace, and to a certain extent, I'm not sure that Marquette is going to be mad about that, right? Like, I don't think this is a team that needs to rush through half court sets and is really trying to turn a team over. Though they did do a good job of generating turnovers the last two games. But it'll be interesting to see how much Marquette kind of tries to get out on the break, right? Marquette's got the athletes to move on the break. The question is, will they try and push pace, or will they accept the Wisconsin pace and just try and outlast them? I don't know which way, if you're Wojo, which way would you go? Would you accept the pace, or would you try and push the pace?
It's hard to say, because you know with this group you haven't really necessarily seen them try to play with pace against a talented team yet.
Right.
But I think you would want to try to get up and down and get just a little more, just because that's the way Marquette likes to play. So you want to play your game and just get more possessions for your offense, and hopefully get a few more shots for Dawson Garcia, a few more shots for Lewis or McEwen or whoever's going to be the hot hand in that game. And this could be a game where Carton could serve you a little bit better because he's played against the Badgers. Actually, I take that back. Has he? I might have to double check that. I may have spoken too soon if he's playing against the Badgers, because I'll have to double check that. But I you want to play at your pace, so I'm just going to assume that Marquette would want to try to play at their pace, but not at the sake of losing control. And if you start turning the ball over, right? Because if you speed up some of Marquette's guards, they may turn it over a bit. Kobe's had his issues with turnovers. So is Cy. So you want to be careful about speeding up the pace. Carton did play against Wisconsin once. He played against them last year, 61-57. It was a loss. He didn't score. Yeah, didn't have a point in the game. 0-for-1.
Not great.
So there you go.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's ostensibly a home game for Marquette, but again, does that really matter? Not really, but you are shooting on your rims and stuff like that. So I think it'll be a good game. I don't know how far, if I'm comfortable again predicting a win, because as much as it pains us, Wisconsin is a good team this year again.
Yep.
You know,
they should die a little bit inside, but
yeah,
truth is what it is.
Yeah, it sure does. So that's painful. Again, I think Marquette's got the athletes. As much as it pains me to say this, I think this is really going to come down to coaching. I think Marquette's probably got the better athletes. Wisconsin's got a better, at least for them in these early season, probably has a better style that's going to get more out of what they've got.
They've got guys who have more bought in and more used to their system.
Yes, correct. Exactly. So they've got, I don't want to use the experience word, but they've just got more buy-in, I think is the correct way to say that.
I think they're more correctly built. Maybe not correctly is not the word I want to use here, but they are built better for what they want to do.
Yes.
Right? Like they have the players for the system they want to run, and they have players who have been in the system long enough that they know what they're supposed to run and what they're supposed to do. Whereas Marquette is talented, yes. Guys who bought in, yes, but used to the system, maybe not quite as much, because Marquette's run a few more freshmen and sophomores out there, or new faces that have not played in this system more than just two games. It'll be three games when we get there on Friday, but the experience edge, the comfort edge in the system that they're going to be playing on Friday goes to Wisconsin. You just have to concede that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the experience edge goes to them. Unfortunately, I think the coaching edge goes to them. One thing that'll be interesting, right, that is always a plot line of the Marquette-Wisconsin games, especially those games if they're when they're played at the Kohl Center, et cetera, is the officiating, right? Wisconsin always seems to get the calls or at least doesn't get called for things that other teams might, etc. Without crowds, I wonder how much of the officiating is altered without that crowd experience and, right, you know, officials just calling fouls and, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think that's a little less of a strength for Wisconsin this year than years past. So hopefully, you know, players like Theo John and Dawson Garcia are not getting into foul trouble. Because if they do, I think we're really, really in trouble there, right? With Potter and Rovers, if any one of the three primary bigs on Marquette gets into foul trouble, I think we could, you know, if we're having to depend on Oso for, you know, more than 10 minutes in a game, I think we're looking at significant trouble in that game.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of home court advantage, right, is the officiating. When you've got, you know, how many thousands of fans riding an official on every call, right, even if the officials never admit it, it can play into your favor. And the officials love it when they call that block charge and the crowd just erupts in their favor. Like, yeah, man, I just made a great call. They love that.
Right.
And that can play in your favor. And so that's something Marquette is going to be missing in this game is even though Wisconsin fans always do find their way into Marquette's arena, whether it was the Bradley Center or now the Fiserv Forum, there were always going to be Wisconsin fans in there. But at least Marquette could outnumber them and be a little louder on the calls they want than the Wisconsin fans would. So that's something Marquette is going to be missing out on is the thousands of extra fans in the arena riding the officials and trying to get them on their side and trying to get those two or three extra calls that go the home team's way that maybe could be the difference in a close game and could be the difference in a critical moment late in the game, whether they're calling, you know, whatever, a key block charge call or get a couple extra free throws, something like that. It's pretty much all on the coaching staff,
right,
riding the officials and try to get the calls going in their favor. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, because like when you're playing at the Kohl Center and the crowd erupts every time Wisconsin draws a charge, well, that can kind of snowball on you and kind of get out of hand. Fortunately, we won't be dealing with that. So that, I mean, that's good, but you know, this game is in our arena. So you would hope we're getting those calls, but we're not gonna have the fans helping us get those calls this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be an interesting game. I mean, you know, it is a rivalry, no matter how much Wisconsin wants to say otherwise. It's a rivalry game, so those are always different and unique and one-off. And again, I think Marquette will be competitive. I whether Marquette can win, some of my predetermination on that will come from how we look against Oklahoma State. But I would say I still think we probably lose this game, but I do think we'll be competitive. And who knows? You know, maybe we'll have like Henry Ellenson's freshman year where tight game and you know, he just went superhero and won the game at the buzzer, so to speak. So maybe that's what we'll see. I don't know. Where do you stand on the game?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly consider Marquette the underdog in this game, even though it would be at home. Ken Pom, for what it's worth, agrees, has Marquette as a slight dog. Hey, you got to give this for Steve Wojciechowski, though. He actually is .500 against Wisconsin. His record against Big Ten teams overall is pretty bad, but against Wisconsin, he's 3-3. So his teams actually have played pretty well in this game, last year being the exception, but he's actually done fairly well. I mean, okay against Wisconsin. Obviously, you wish he would win every game against Wisconsin, but to be .500, especially with you know, that first season, he was completely overmatched. He's 3-3 against Wisconsin, and you would love to see him surprise us this year. But yeah, I'm kind of where you were, Phil. I'm really hoping that these freshmen can surprise me and pull off a big win against a favored Wisconsin team, much in the same way that kind of Henry Ellenson's team kind of pulled that surprise on us a few years ago. But I think I'm just being overly optimistic if I say anything other than Wisconsin should probably win the game on Friday.
Yeah. I mean, I want the win, especially in this context. A brief anecdotal story that puts a lot more importance on this game. So I think listeners are aware, or Twitter followers certainly are, of my oldest son, who goes by No Red for Owen in this context. A brief story. The other day, the wife character was out of the house at work, and it was just me and the boy hanging out. And I decided to do some actual parenting and ask him to clean up the family room. And, you know, no, we're not going to watch any TV because we got to get stuff cleaned. And he stopped and he turned to me and he said, "Dad, I know the bad." And this is a direct quote. "Dad, I know the Badger Marquette game is coming up. If you let me watch Blaze and the Monster Machines right now and not clean up, I'll definitely cheer for Marquette in that game." I have never been so angry and proud at the same time. He tried to flex the Marquette fandom for Blaze and the Monster Machine. I was devastated and you know, elated at his negotiating skills. I of course told him no, that we're going to do real parenting. And I said, "Listen," I called his bluff. I said, "Listen, if you want to be a loser, you can cheer for the Badger game, or cheer for the Badgers in that game." He's like, "Yeah, you're right, Dad. I don't want to cheer for them." But then the little turd, as soon as the wife character came home, the first thing he said to her was, "Mom, Dad said you were a loser," which initiated all sorts of other pain points. So the moral of this story is, don't have children.
That kid is as crafty as his father.
That's the problem. He is the spitting image of me, and I really start to understand why my parents were insane, because it was my fault. But the moral of this story is, he needs to be taught a lesson, and that Marquette needs to win this game, so he knows this is a non-negotiable situation.
Yeah, the thing is, he's at that age now, like, he's those formative years as a fan where he kind of like understands who's good and who's not, you know?
Yes.
And as opposed to like when the kids are little, you know, you could just dress them in whatever and say, "Well, you're a fan of this team." But, you know, it's important that your favorite team is good when your kids are the age that Owen is right now, because this is when he kind of really locks in as a fan, right?
Right.
Like it's like, okay, well, I remember watching, you know, Aaron Rodgers when I was that age, and he was my favorite player. That's why I'm a, you know, Packers fan 20 years later. So it's similar with Marquette. You don't want Marquette to be a total grease fire right now, because that's what he's going to stick with him, and you could lose him to the red side if it goes too poorly over the next few years.
Yeah, I had him locked in for a number of years because Marcus Howard was by far his best, and he loves basketball. Marcus Howard was by far his favorite basketball player that existed. He's drifted toward Giannis now, but you know, nothing wrong with that, but we got to get a standout Marquette player that he can latch on to. Now, the sneaky thing that I've gone and done is, so for this year only, he's going to a private Catholic school for 4K, which my wife doesn't realize is filled with a bunch of Marquette alumni. So if he had gone to public school this year and or a daycare center where the vast majority of folks are going to be Wisconsin fans, because let's be honest, we live in Wisconsin, there's just more of them than there are Marquette. I'm counting on the subtle reinforcement of his classmates also being Marquette fans by their parents raising them correctly and probably not living in the hellscape that is a split household. I'm counting on them to help reinforce. So basically the moral of this story is, we need to come together. We need to get this win. Do it for Owen. We need to bring him back to the light side.
Surround him with good people, and hopefully your team wins games, and then you could just raise him right. Makes it easy for you.
Yeah.
Help Phil be a better parent. Win this for
him. Correct. Lord knows I can't do it for myself.
Hey, we appreciate you guys checking in with us here on Scrambled Eggs. Hit us with your feedback on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOOF23. That's three O's. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. Phil, I want to wish you the best of luck as you try to, you know, you're doing pretty well with Owen. You know, Amelia is still at that age. She's your daughter. got to keep working on her, but she's still at the age that it probably doesn't matter that much to her. But I wish for nothing but peace in your household this week, because I know it will be stressful.
Well, listen, as long as Marquette wins, all will be well. If Marquette loses, all hell will break loose. So let's do it for Phil.
I am praying for you then. And good luck to all of you out there. Hopefully we get two wins this week. Regardless, we will check in with you next week. Till next time, seashells and balloons, everybody.